CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
This session's on undocumented Cold Fusion MX. All right, our agenda today, CF set, CF output, CF ML comment. I'm going to make sure we cover the most documented topics in Cold Fusion. You got everybody's attention? Just kidding. All right, my name is Nate Nelson. Some of you have met me before. Those of you who don't know who I am, I'm a software consultant from Denver, Colorado, and I'm going to do my best today to teach you guys some good tricks. All right, here's our real agenda. We're going to cover some XML configuration files, CF admin extensions, service factory, query object, string object, CFC get metadata, and briefly cover the MX7 charting styles. So there's quite a few good topics here. Yeah? Oh, yeah, that's a good question here. He asked if these are going to, since these aren't in the book, if my slides are going to be available. I've actually put them on my website. If you go to Zententia.com, it's Xententia.com, and then right here on the left, you can download both the slides and the code. Thanks for asking that right away. All right, XML configuration files. Well, before we start, I've got to make sure to read my disclaimer. This is not supported. There's no guarantee that it's always going to work or that it does work on your environment, and you got to use it at your own risk. There's a couple topics in here I'll mention that are supported, and they're very lightly documented, and I'm going to mention them because they're really useful and not a lot of people know about them. But the majority are things that aren't in the documentation. And usually that's for a reason. It's usually because they're not working properly, and because of that, they don't want you using them, or you know, it's not supported because they know it doesn't work properly. It hasn't been tested all the way yet. All right, config files. Before you get into using config files, make sure to make backups of your config files. There's several different config files. I'll cover a couple of them today. And make sure if you use an XML config file that you use an editor that has some like syntax highlighting or something that helps you write XML. Because if you make a change and make it wrong, then you're going to have some problems. And before you make a change in place, your CF service has to be restarted. All right, the first one we're going to cover. Yes. What was that? Oh, that's great. Thanks for letting me know. Yeah, so he said as of CF701 or later, you don't have to restart the service. It'll automatically pick it up. So that's great news. Might take a minute, but it'll pick it up. That's great news. All right, the first one we'll look at, this is just a real simple change. You may or may not want to use it. For some people, it could be useful. Your Cold Fusion file extensions are in the web.xml file, and it basically tells Cold Fusion what to do with a .cfm or .cfml file or .cfc. If you wanted your HTML files to run through the Cold Fusion server, if for some reason you wanted to disguise something or wanted to put some Cold Fusion tag in an HTML file, I'm not sure exactly why you may want to do it, but if you did, you could do it. And this is how you do it. You can see the mapping over here. You can see the mapping right here. And you would basically add one that said .html or .htm. And then before you had to restart the CF service, but it looks like as of 701 you don't, right? Okay. For this one you do. And just... What's that? I don't know if it necessarily say you'd protect them, but it would make them run through the ColdFusion service, and basically it means you could put ColdFusion tags in the HTML files, or you could make someone not realize you had CFM on your website. The bad thing about it, though, is if you didn't have any ColdFusion tags in HTML files and they were just static text, it would obviously take longer to go through ColdFusion than it would have just come right to the browser. So, and if you're using IIS, if you're using the built-in web service, then you don't have. You, once you put it there, you're good to go. If you're using IIS, you'll have to add .html as a file type and make sure that it's parsed by the JRun.dll, and you'll have to restart IIS for that too. And if you want to quickly look at what this looks like, here's the web.xml file for MX7. And you can see this one's pretty large, so if you wanted to, so you're going to go down to right towards the end of it, around line 314, somewhere around there. And if you wanted to add one for .html, you would actually add two of them, one without the slash, one with it to support the search engines. And when you do it, you notice here with MX7, you've got, there's an ID there, macromedia mapping underscore. You just want to add to whatever was there before. And by default, it'll be 13. If you've changed it or if you see something different there, make sure to add to the ones there, 14 and 15, and do it like this. And with MX6, it looks quite a bit different. It's a lot smaller, and there's no IDs on them. So you can see you just add them there to the end. And I added mine and actually tested it to make sure, and it definitely does work. After I added that and restarted the CF service, it came back and gave me debugging for the HTML page. Here's another one. Password.properties. This is really useful. I've had to use it myself. If you forget your admin password, especially on your own personal computer, if you have access to these files, this can be very useful. There's a file in your CFMX install directory, /lib/password.properties. It's not an XML file, but it's a config file that has the encrypted username and password, or the encrypted password for both RDS password and the admin password in there. And as you can see, right here, you can't read that. Those are encrypted. Now, if you wanted to reset them, you could set encrypted defaults, enter a password, just right after the equal sign, just enter any kind of password here. Before you had to restart your CF service, I'm not sure if you still do or not. But it seems like sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But you can try it first without it. And then once you set the encrypted defaults, change your password, then you go back into your CF admin. You can get into it now. And if you change your password, then it'll go back and automatically update this and re-encrypt it again. So very useful if you forget you don't want to go reinstall ColdFusion again. You want to see what that looks like real quick? That's it right there. All right, here's something else. This one is documented. It's very lightly documented. Not a whole lot of people know about it. It's really useful, especially for someone who their main job is to administrate servers and administer a ColdFusion server. It actually lets you add on links and extensions to the CFAdmin itself. And it's very, very easy to do. All you do is make a blank file in this directory, your webroot CFIDE administrator, extensions custom.cfm, just make it blank, and then right after that, add one of these for each link you want to do, and you don't even have to restart anything, it'll add it right to the web browser. So I'll show you an example of that here. This will show up, custom extensions, and you got some links in here. And then when you use it, it'll show up in here. I'll put the file path up there again real quick. Your web root, cfide/administrator, and then you'll put a file in there called extensionscustom.cfm. It's a simple blank file, and then you just add one of those. You add this HTML for each link you want to put in there, and I'll help you. We'll look at that file real quick. See, here's his right here. You could add other HTML in there too, but this is all you need. Pretty simple to use. And all this code and everything, the PowerPoint, all that is in that zip file if you can get to it. All right, now we're going to get to the cool stuff. This is the ColdFusion Service Factory. ColdFusion itself and this ColdFusion admin uses a set of Java objects to give it internal access to the CF service. And these are available. They're not real easy to use, and they're not supported to use. They can be dangerous if you're not careful what you're doing. And most everything you can do in these, it's a cool thing to play around with, and it's if you want to get access to do something you can only do in the CF admin, especially if you're before ColdFusion 7. If it's ColdFusion 6, then this is where you want to do it, but definitely be careful. We'll take a quick look at that. And one thing I want to mention, I've got another presentation tomorrow afternoon on the CFMX7 admin API, and that is what I recommend using for CFMX7. As it's more supported and it's definitely a little more documented. So take a quick look at that. And as you can see, to implement it, all you need to do is create an object, just set a variable to a creation of an object, coldfusion.server.servicefactory, and then dump it out. And in a minute, I'll show you how to use one of the components as well. And when you dump that out, this is what you get here. So you can see there's a lot of different methods and objects in there. There's a lot. Just from this, you can kind of mess around and see the different methods in here. We'll collapse some of these. We'll look at the one we're going to use today, a data source service. Some of the methods on it. Load, store, some of the ones we're going to look at, get names, some of those. I mean, as you can see, there's a ton here. Not all of them work the way you'd expect them to work because they may be tricky to use. It's not intended for you to use them. If you want to kind of mess around, it's pretty cool to see how it operates internally. And we'll look at how we created one real quick. Actually, let's continue with the slides and get these over with, and we can get into some good examples. I don't want to kill you guys with slides. The next one we'll look at, the string object. Strings are represented as the Java string object. So any of you who have worked with Java before and are familiar with the string object, there's some items on here that are available to us, and this will be pretty good news to you. You may have already found this. Now, here's some of the undocumented features you can use with strings. If you just set a variable to a string, then you can use this. You got substring, index of, starts with, ends with, char at. And if you see, my string is ColdFusion. String.substring 3 is defusion. What that does is it just does a substring and it starts at position 3. One thing you'll notice, it looks like it's position 4, but the Java string object actually starts with 0. So 3 is actually right here. Here's another way of using substring, 0, 2, and it'll start at 0 and go 2 spaces. The uses of this substring is kind of like you would use it in any of the languages that supports it. Index of, this tells you where the first one starts. Index of, and then give it a number, tells it where it goes to. They're pretty cool. And then when we're done with these slides, I'll show you guys the example as well. Query object. Queries are also internally represented as a Java object. This is ColdFusion.SQL.QueryTable. And some of the undocumented features include the ability to manipulate the results a little bit It doesn't work as well as it did in ColdFusion 6.1. First, last, next, previous, sort. Some of the other ones you can get some info from them. First is last, get column count. These ones at the bottom, the get information ones, those work in MX7. These ones, however, don't work very well in MX7. They do work in MX6. And I'll show you an example of those as well when we're done with these slides. CFC get metadata. The most common method to do this, you just create your object and dump it out. And it gives you some good information of it, but it doesn't give you quite as much as it does doing it this way. Especially if you create your CFCs using some of the additional attributes like hint, display name, some of those, it will actually output those additional attributes, give you some really good information, and I'll show you an example of that one as well. And to do this, you set a variable, doesn't matter what it's called, to create object, and you create this object here. Then set another variable to proxy or whatever that variable was you used to create that object, dot get metadata, and pass in the path to a CFC you want to use, and then get page context, and then dump that out. It's pretty easy to use. It can give you some pretty good information there. And something that's pretty cool here, if you work with CFCs, or if you don't and you want to look into them, you can, once you have your CFCs, if you build them correctly and use some of the, well, whether you build them with all the additional attributes or not, you'll still get some good information. But if you use some of the additional attributes like hint and display name, you can get some instant built-in documentation. I mean, all of us hate writing documentation, right? How many here love writing documentation? I don't see anybody raising their hand. I know I don't like it. Here's something else you can do, too. You can look at the component browser, and I'll show you where that's at here in a minute as well. And this feature is definitely documented. It is supported. It's just not very commonly known. It's something I've definitely used in the past several times. Application scope. Here's something real quick on the application scope. How many of you have worked in an application were wondering, you know, what the current settings of that application scope was? You had no idea what it was doing at the time. You wanted to go find it out. A quick way to do this is just like that. Just dump out the variable application.getApplicationSettings. And I know this works in MX7. I'm not sure about MX6. But this is definitely very, very useful. What's that? It is different. It gives you a couple additional fields there. It is a little different. MX7 charting styles. You could do an entire presentation or a whole class on doing some of the charting styles. So we're not going to be able to cover them too much today, but I'm just going to point you to a user guide and tell you that you can do it. And the user guide comes installed with your ColdFusion server, whether it's development or not. It comes installed in your installdirectly/charting/userguide.pdf. And in there, it's a very detailed document on how to manage and modify your MX7 charts and graphs. It's pretty cool. You can make some really nice charts and graphs using that. And that PDF, in case you don't have ColdFusion readily available, I put that PDF in the zip file on with my files on my website. All right, let's get down to business now. Enough slides. We looked at admin extensions. We looked quickly at the service factory. Now I'm going to show you a good example using the service factory. What this is doing is it's spitting out information for all my data sources. These are all the data sources I have installed in my CFAdmin. You can see CF doc examples, CF snippets, those ones come installed. And inside there, you can get some decent information too. And no, you can't go get passwords out of it. It's got those encrypted. And I'll show you how I did that code real quick. All right, we're going to call the service factory, just like I showed you before. Set a variable, call it whatever you want. I called it service factory. Create an object, a Java object, coldfusion.server.servicefactory. Create another variable and name it to servicefactory.datasourceService. Then from there, you can access those methods. I'm going to set all my data sources to datasourceService.getDataSources. That was one of the methods that are available in this object. And when you dump that out, that's what you get. And I'm going to show you how to use some of this information here, too. I just want to verify to make sure data source is running. I'm going to call yes, it's running. I'll show you how I did that real quick, too. See if I've got one that's not running. Well, if one's not set up or it's not, it can't connect to it, this basically does the exact same thing you see here. This does this. When you set something up and it verifies it to make sure it's connected to it, it does the exact same thing there. Show you how I did that real quick. What's that? Oh, really? I didn't know that. So with the admin API, it only gives you a Boolean, just a true or false? Ah. And in here, if it gets an error, it'll actually give you the error? Okay, that's useful information. Thanks. What kind of I think you're still in here back here. What kind of, can you answer that question? He asked what kind of authentication is required to use the service factory and the admin API.
The service factory is locked down.
So the service factory is locked down. You can get to it on your own computer or if you have complete open rights to the server. If you're on somebody's web host, then you may have a hard time getting into that information. Yeah, so that's how they lock it down. It gets locked down by making it so you can't create Java objects. But in other words, if that is not disabled, if you can create Java objects, then yes, you can get to it without knowing the password to the CFAdmin. What's that? Yes, you can create a data source. You can set one up. You can verify them, make sure they're there. You can list them. You can do pretty much everything you can do in the CFAdmin. Without being able to get the password. I mean, and that's up to, if you've got your server hosted, that's up to your web host if they want to enable you to access Java objects. It can be dangerous. The only thing is they're not very easy to use, and that's why they're not documented. But if you want to do something quick, like the most common usage for it that's actually pretty easy to do is like adding a mapping. So if you wanted to add a mapping to something or if you wanted to just do something like that, it's pretty easy to do without waiting for someone else to do it. And the way I did this here, if you want to look at how to use one of these objects, I'm going to call the service factory again, just like I did before. I'm going to call the data source service. And then I had mine in a C of try catch. And all I did was just set a variable to verify DB. Data source service dot verify data source, and then pass in the name of the data source. And then it gives it back to you. So if you wanted to try using some of the other ones that are there, I'm not going to teach you how to do it and be responsible for that. But if you wanted to try doing that,
You access them just like you would any other Java object, and you can get them by going and checking out the API and looking at the data source services. Our next example, the string object and the query object. These I kind of showed you how to do them before. This is how you do it here. Well, we'll look at the menu here. All right, for the string object, here is the data types that are available to you, the variables that are available, and how they work. You've got substring, index of, starts with, and char at. And here's an example of how they're used. You can see here below. I've got my string set to cold fusion, string 3 equals defusion. I showed you that before in the slides. And the way you use that, you just output it. That's all you do. Just like that. So that's something that can definitely be useful. I've used that myself. Yes? That's a very good point. Yeah, he asked if, you know, this is useful in a development environment. Now, using it in a production app, that can be dangerous. You probably wouldn't want to depend on it because it's not documented, it's not supported. So when it goes to version CFMX8, then it may not work, and there's nothing you can do about it. So you want to be careful when and where you use that. It's a great development tool, and it's great for something that you have as like a test project or something like that, but don't try and put it into production until it does become documented and supported.
Are there speed differences between
find and index? I don't know. I think that there would be, just because you're accessing that Java object directly instead of having ColdFusion do it. So I think there would be, but I haven't actually tested to see if there's a speed difference between using it this way and actually using like list find or some of the string objects that are available through ColdFusion. I imagine if there is a difference, it wouldn't be very noticeable. Unless you're doing something crazy like searching over a string that had thousands of characters or something. Yes? Like what attributes are available and how to pass them in. Okay, so you want to know what the objects for the data, like the data source services or the CF service factory, needs to accept. The way you can, that's the problem with them not being documented is they can be hard to use. Now, if you want to look at this, one way you can do it here is you can see here's my data source service. And methods, one of the ones we used was verify DB, verify data source, right here. It says what it returns a Boolean. However, it doesn't actually say what it accepts and how to use it. It doesn't. There's no, as far as I know, there's no printed documentation anywhere that says how each one of these work. So it may take some messing around with it and playing around with it on your own development environment to see how they work. Does that answer your question? Kind of. Yeah. Okay. You know, I don't know if that's available or not.
Second question is the implication of objects methods within the sharp or the pounds there, is that true for any job?
What's that?
Can you invoke any objects methods as well?
No, you can't. This one you can, but any other Java objects you can. This one you can because when you have a variable set to a string, it's represented as an object, so it's already created for you. However, if you were going to create something like when we looked at the service factory, you have to actually go and create it. But this one, since you set the string, it's already created. And now your other index was to see if what method was available?
ToString.
Yeah. So string.toString. You wanted to see if ToString is available. I haven't tested to see if it is myself. However, if you wanted to check, you would do this here and try it. And to get the documentation for this, you would go to the Sun website and get the documentation for java.lang.string. And then you could try any of those methods and see how they work. I'm not sure how many of them work. I know these ones do. These are the ones that I've used myself. All right, query object. We'll cover that one real quickly because it's not as useful as some of these other ones. It's kind of more just, you know, cool to see what you can do. There is one useful use of it, however. Here's some of the ones that are available. Most of these, you know, you probably won't use them very much. They're just kind of cool to play around with. What I did is I ran a query that gets the example apps database and just lists me out the departments out of one of the tables. We're going to mess with that one here. And jump to beginning or end. This is something that did work in ColdFusion 6. It may not necessarily be something you'd want to do. It's not real useful, but it's kind of cool to see that it does work. It did work in CF6, but not in MX7. And what this does is you actually call this here, query name.first, and then call the record again, and it resets it to the first or the last row in your results. And I'll show you how the code works for those in a minute too. This one actually is useful, and what this does is it checks to see if anytime you're doing any kind of pagination or listing out results from a query. I know all of us have used code to see if going by the record counts, if it's the last or the first row in each one. This one will actually give that back to you pretty easy, and it's actually very useful. And you can see how I have the parentheses around that and then the commas, the parentheses at the end. I used code to build those. I'll show you real quick how that works. This one right here, I output my query. If my query, whatever your query name is, dot is first, it will return a yes. It'll return a Boolean true if it's first, or a false if it's not. And then for the last, you do is last. My query dot is last. And it'll return a yes if it is or if it's not. Here's another one you used to be able to use. This, and the way I showed you the one above here, what you could do with MX6 is you could just run this real quick and set my query.first, and it would set it to the first row. It doesn't work in MX7, though. I'm not sure exactly why you'd want to use it anyways. But it's pretty cool to see some of these things that you can do. And then here's another one that works in MX6. You set my query.next or my query.previous, and it will then set the row to the next row from the one you're at, or the previous one from the one you're at too. Here's one that does work in MX7. You can resort your query. And I'll show you how that works. You resort your query by doing myquery.sort, passing the column ID of one of the columns and say false, and it'll then change it and reorder it. And what I did here is I passed in the column ID of the first one. What's that? I'm not sure if you can do multiple columns. I think it's, I haven't tried it with multiple columns, tried sorting by multiple columns. I'm not sure why you couldn't do it, but from the looks of the way this function works, I don't think you could. I think if you, what's that? Yeah, and that's, well... I'm not sure what the false is actually used for. I think it's actually to just make it different than it is now. It just flips it. And then if you wanted to pass in, what's that? False is just literal. Yeah, so there you go. It just makes it ascending or descending. So this is the way I've always used it, just to return it. And then if you output that query again, it'll resort it. Now if you go look at this real quick. My query before showed development being the first one, and then I passed in the column name of department name, that column name, and then it resorted it off of that column name. Yes, it does. He asked if his first and his last works in six. Yes, it does. That's definitely the one where I could see everybody using. That's one I've had to use before, too. Very useful. But then again, be careful of when you use it, because it's not, nobody knows if it's going to go away one day. Here's something. What's that? Here's something else. You can get the column types. If you want to spit out the number of columns, there's the one available called myquery.getColumnCount. However, there's something already available for that too. And then if you want to loop over the columns and check out get column type name and pass in the ID of the current column, it's pretty interesting. It tries to do something here, but it doesn't give me back the right data types. It's pretty interesting. Department ID, type of char, that one's actually right, I think. Department name, numeric. It's not numeric. You can see here above. Department ID looks like it's either a varchar or a char. Department name's not. What's that? Yeah, that's right. So that's not something that you probably would use very often. If you want to get anything out of this portion of this right here, this is definitely the one you might want to use. It's pretty useful. However, it's still not real difficult to do it through ColdFusion either. What's that? The data types that it's spitting out, I believe, is specific to it's the ColdFusion driver data types. Now, however, the reason why they're not right, I've never looked in to see how they work or to see what use they are there. I've never tried to use them because they don't work correctly. They didn't work correctly in MX6 either. It's just one of those other methods that are out there that you can mess around with. Here's a couple other ones. Yeah. It won't in MX6, MX7. MX6, it may reset it. That's why I was saying some of the examples where I did the next and the previous, and I did let's skip from the first to the end. When you use the last and the first functions there, it actually does reset the result set there and reorders them a little bit. So that's why it works in MX6. MX7, it doesn't. You can actually return it. It'll just return a boolean there. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that would work. That would be an interesting one to test out. So he's asking if you started using this and then halfway down your result set you change the result set and then we're still using it later, if it would still go from where it was when you started or if it would reset. That'd be a good one to test out. I haven't actually tried that myself. What was that question? Yeah, get metadata on an actual query. That's a very good point. So the get metadata, I'm going to show you the get metadata on using it on a component. He's saying you can use it on a query object also, and that's going to return the right data types. Yeah. Yeah, so it's actually supported. It's just not very commonly known. Now, here's the one I mentioned to you about the application settings. This is definitely something really, really useful if you want to see where some things are at, and it gives you a couple additional things that you don't get just by dumping it out. And you get all these variables and see where they're set at. And that one's real simple. You just do get application settings and output it. All right, now we're going to look at get CFC metadata. There's two ways of doing this, and the real common method is just to set a variable to an object and then dump it out. Another method is to use something called coldfusion.runtime.templateProxy. And then you're going to do get metadata and then pass in the path to a CFC, get page context. When you do this, let me show you the difference of how these come out. Okay, so here's the common one. It spits out what components are in here, and it's a little information on each one of the methods in there. That's the one most of us have used. It's pretty useful. And this one does even more than that. And I've used this many times myself when you're working with somebody else's code and you're not sure how to access it and they didn't document it very well. When you do this, it actually gives you that information. So when you go and look at this, you can see it gives you a lot more information. It gets a lot more in depth. And here's the hint. It says, you know, for each one of these, it gives you a ton more information. It gives you all the parameters. Anytime they use hint or any of those things there, a lot more information there available to you. Now, while we're on this topic, I'm going to show you something pretty cool. Some of you probably know about it. This one definitely is documented, and this is one of my favorite utilities when I'm working with CFCs. It's the component browser. And let me grab that link for you. There you go. So here's the link. It is your IP address to your installation, whatever it is, if it's localhost or whatever it is there, /cfid/componentutils/componentdoc.cfm. This is real useful. A lot of you may have known about it before. This is something that I'm surprised isn't more out in your face as it should be. This is a really great utility to find out more about the CFCs that are on your server, and especially if you use CFCs a lot, this is a great tool too. This is where you can get you can create documentation for your CFCs you have. And this, to get to this, you do have to have the CFAdmin password. If you try and go to it, I'm already logged into it, but if you try and go to it without being logged in, it'll ask you for a password. What's that? Yeah, either one would work. You just have to have a password to get into it. Now, when you go to it this way, I believe you have to have the admin password because it's actually going inside the admin directory. It's actually going inside CFIDE. I'm not sure if the RDS password would work or not. But definitely, it will ask you for a password. And it actually asks you for the same login as you would go to get to the CFAdmin. Now, to look at these, you can see here the way this works. On your left, you have your packages. These are all the individual CFC packages that you've got. These aren't the individual CFCs. These are the packages there. So here's one, cfide.adminapi. And then down here, you're going to see the different ones here. Let's check out data source. When you go here, See all that great documentation? It's good stuff. You imagine creating that yourself? Yuck. Now, when you use CFCs, make sure to use additional things like hint and display name, because that information will also show up here too. And then to call this, let me show you how to call the metadata here. Now there's another way you can get that documentation directly without going through the component browser too, and that was what I showed you back here. Right there. If you see your instant built-in documentation, use your URL, /cfide/componentutils/componentdetail.cfm, and then you're going to pass in component equals and then the path to your component. You do that and it'll spit you out some useful documentation there. And let me show you real quick, I also mentioned the MX7 charting modifications you can do. Show you where that's at. Your install directory, charting, it's right here. userguide.pdf. We'll look at this real quick, just to visit real quick what you can do. And it comes with a little program and a little style editor too. So it's not real difficult to use, however, it's very involved and there's a lot to it. So it can, and what you do when you set these styles, then you create your own style, and then when you're going to use your charts, you actually pass the name of that style that you're using in your chart and your graph tags. So you can see here, like looking at one of these, that's not a normal chart here. There's a lot of different ways you can do, and this actually gives you pretty good information on setting that up. So anybody have any questions, or is there something that we need to visit a little bit more? We covered a little too quickly. So now there's also some other undocumented things here too. There's actually one that I just found earlier. And let me go to that here and show you. This one could be definitely something you might want to look in using. Oops. Anybody know off the hand what's that passcode? 0403. What was the question again? Oh, okay. That's something I'll show you again real quick. That's pretty useful. CFadmin extensions. What I did is you create a file in your dubdubroot cfide/administrator/extensions-custom.cfm. It's a blank file, and then you're going to add this HTML here and add a link for each one of the links you want to use. And it doesn't need to be, as you can see, this is not inside my CFadmin. You can make it anywhere. And then it actually adds that to your CFadmin. Like this, so you can put any link here you want and it'll add it under custom extensions. And each one of your links is in here. And these are the ones that I created, so if you want to get this, if you want to get all this code, again, it's right here on my website, sententia.com, xententia.com, and then over here on the left, undocumented CFMX. you can download all the code and the presentation here too. Okay, now that we're connected, let's go look at this real quick. I was hoping we'd have a little bit of time to look at this. I just found this today. Just messing around with. What's that? I will. I'll test it out and check it, and I'll actually add it to that. So if you want to wait a little bit to download that file, I'll actually add it to it probably tonight, because I was definitely interested in this. This is some other encryption methods that are available, some strong encryption. This is actually a tech note that's available. So this is known. It's something that wasn't originally documented. Strong encryption in NMX7. Using the encrypt and decrypt, there's two undocumented encryption types. It's this one, PBE with MD5 and DES, and then another one. There's that one here too. These are different encryption types. If you've used encrypt or decrypt, when you do it, you pass in what you want to encrypt, the key, and then the algorithm you want to encrypt with. These are the encryption types that are not in the original documentation. They're not documented. And they use a different type of encryption that can be a little more strong. So that's definitely something I was hoping we'd have some time to check out there. Any more quick questions? Yeah. And you're talking about your host file, like on your Windows host file?
Exactly.
So he's asking if on your Windows host file, if you change it and point it to a different IP address, if it takes up to an hour sometimes for the JRE to see that. Has anybody ever tested that or see if there's a way to make it see it faster?
Right.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure there's a tech demo on Mac or Adobe site that says how to adjust.
Okay.
Great,
great information. So check out on adobe.com and look at some of the tech notes on there. There's definitely something out there. If you want, I'd be glad. If anybody has any questions on these, I'd like to cover these more in depth, but unfortunately there's not. They're only like 50 minutes long, each one. If anybody has any questions on these, you know, feel free to send me an email, and I'll do what I can to answer any questions or at least point you in the right direction. Here's my email address right here. A great information site where I got most of my information is cfcdev.com. So, yes? No, this stuff will be on. Here, let me. There. So all my code and examples and the actual PowerPoint, and I included that PDF for your MX7 charting styles right here on Zentecha.com. And if you go there right on the left, you see them right here. And any of you that are going to come to either of my other two presentations, I have one in the morning. It's a great one if you use SQL Server, or even if you don't use SQL Server like MySQL, it'll work for a lot of those too. And there's, I'm going to skip past some of the basics of using SQL and show you some great tricks in there. And that's one you'd want to come to. And those as well, all the examples and everything will be up there when the class starts too. And the other one too. Beyond Basic SQL for Cold Fusion, it's in the morning, I think at 9. And what we're going to do there is we're going to skip past using as SQL with Cold Fusion and get to some pretty cool tricks there, and getting some use out of your data there. I actually taught a class at the beginning of the conference on advanced SQL programming, So I'm hoping that'll be a great presentation. I'll try and fit in as much as I can in 50 minutes. And then another one tomorrow afternoon, I think it's at 3. I'm going to cover the MX7 admin API. So those of you who are scared to use the service factory or want to do things probably the more appropriate way, the more that's documented and you're not going to get in trouble for, come to that, and I'm going to cover the admin API a little bit and show you how to use that and what's available to you there. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Is there any more questions or anything? Great.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.